Hugh Howey's Wool has captivated readers across the globe since its first release and has become one of the most talked about books of the year. Originally a self-published short story, Wool has gone on to sell over 400,000 ebooks and is now being translated into more than 20 languages. It is now being published by Simon & Schuster in both a paperback and hardcover edition simultaneously. Wool is the story of a damaged world in which a community lives in a giant underground silo, hundreds of stories deep. Inside, men and women live within a society full of regulations they believe are meant to protect them from the toxic world outside. These rules must not be broken, and certain topics must never be discussed, like going outside. Again, the title of the novel is Wool, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Hugh Howey to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
There's really two parts of the story, I think. One is just the greatness of the novel and how much fun it is to read. But obviously, the second is how it reached publication, which is not a conventional story. And I would assume that reaction to both has left you somewhat shell-shocked.
It has. It's been a wild year for me, for sure. But I enjoy talking about both. People are really attached to the story, and they've also become really fascinated with how it got out into the world.
So you're a bookseller, you're there in Florida, and you had been working on stories for how long?
I've been writing at a really heavy clip for about 3.5 years before Wool took off, and I was writing and publishing 2 or 3 books a year. And I guess as a bookseller, I knew my chances were very slim to go through the publishing gauntlet, so I was just engaging a small readership directly, and I had no idea anything like this would ever happen.
Talk a little bit about how this story in Wool, which I briefly outlined, but how this went from a short story to the full novel that it's become.
You know, it's not as unusual as it sounds. There's actually quite a history of this in the genre and without the genre. My favorite book growing up was Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card, and that started as a short story. And my publisher, Simon & Schuster, also published Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451, which started as a short story. To me, what's great about writing in the short form is you get to really sample the market and see if people enjoy it and want more of it. My problem right now is I've got several short stories that people are begging for sequels for, so I have to choose what to follow up with.
Was it your decision to enlarge this and bring more to this story, or was it an audience, or was this dictated by an audience in this particular case?
This is definitely dictated by the audience. I was in the middle of writing my next novel when the sales for Wool just took off, and I started getting emails and more reviews online than I've ever had for anything, and all of them were just begging for more. So it was the first time I've really had a really wide international audience. I was getting emails from all over the world, and so I dropped what I was doing and started the second story and serialized the rest of the release.
So most writers would dream of what you have now, in the sense of you write, you go to a major publisher, they publish it, and maybe you're lost within the thousands of other books that they published at any given time, but you get that chance to get your book out in the world. Yours is a much different story because it was self-published and then took off. How were you able to, through self-published means and then through ebook, able to navigate those waters and ultimately get your book into the hands of so many readers?
Well, it helped that I had a great agent as far as getting the book into foreign markets and securing a film deal like we did with Ridley Scott and Steve Zalian. But the actual spread of the ebook was completely out of my hands. This was a story that I didn't market at all. I didn't have a link to it on my website or anything. And when I'm on a book tour right now, and I always ask the audience, like, how many of you told 10 other people to read this book? And every hand goes up. And it's how interconnected we are through social media, not with the author trying to beg people to read their work, but with people who enjoy a work telling everyone they know they should read something. It can just explode. And there's a lot of luck involved. There's just a lot of being in the right place at the right time with the right story. So I don't even know if it's reproducible for myself. What happened? It's just the reader reaction to the story, and it's me trying to keep up with it ever since.
So it's what happens when a book goes viral, when you start recommending it to other people, and people take you up on that. They want to read more, and what's different here is that people are paying a couple bucks for it.
Yeah, and you know, I've tried to keep I've actually get complaints from readers about how cheap my ebooks are. They say they've skipped over them for a long time because they just assume the cost reflects the quality, and it takes several people begging them to read it before they give it a shot. But my attitude is I want the widest readership possible, and I think ebooks should cost a lot less than the old mass market paperbacks of my youth.
So now the book is being published, as I mentioned, by Simon & Schuster in both hardcover and paperback. So there are those of us who still love that form of love having a physical book in our hands. So this is the perfect world in that regard, because you have almost the entire book reading audience covered. So when you think of your next book or your next work, will you go conventional means? Will that agent say, no, we have to sell to the publisher first? Or are you going to go a similar route?
I'm still doing what I did before. Since Wool took off, I've already released 4 other works, and I've done them all the same way. I just self-published them. The advantage to that is that I can get them to the reader immediately. As soon as the book has gone through the editorial process, within 12 hours, the readers can have the book. And if a publisher wants to do something with the work later, that's fine, but I don't want to delay the reader getting to continue the story or pick up a new story just so I can try to get a better publishing contract. I'd much rather have the publishers play catch up.
How much of it do you think of the success of the story has to do with the genre itself, in the sense of that this is how you would imagine a good science fiction book to get into the hands of readers?
I think what's really helped this book is that it doesn't read like science fiction. And I get so many reviews and emails that start, I don't normally read science fiction, but I love this book. You know, when I tell readers who love Hunger Games, it's great that you read a science fiction book and loved it, they can't believe it's even science fiction. I think a dystopian story often, like Cormac McCarthy's The Road or 1984, or you know, these post-apocalyptic stories don't rely on fancy technology. They're stories about people, and at the heart of this story is this great female protagonist that has appealed to readers young and old and both genders. So it's really cross-genre and appealed to a much wider audience, and I love that.
With that short story format of this beginning as a short story, as you say, there's quite a history there, but it almost goes back to the old serials. I mean, going back to Dickens, where you're publishing it in spits and spurts. And does that change the writing process at all?
It does. The way I liken it is the difference between going into a studio and cutting a track as a musician, where you cut maybe 10 tracks for this entire album, and you don't know what song people are going to like or what to do more or less of. Instead, when you go out and play to a live audience and you have a lot of tunes to choose from, you can kind of listen to their reaction and gauge their response and jam with them. And that's what it felt like with this. It didn't mean that I was writing the story that I thought they wanted. A lot of times it meant seeing what their expectations were and then defying that. But I was able to play off interaction and I think deliver a more rewarding reading experience.
Is it now helpful, do you think, to have that interaction still? Or sometimes do you want to put the blinders on and say, look, I'm just going to do this and send it out into the world, and if they like it, they like it, and if they don't, they don't?
I do a little of both. I always have enough projects going on that I can write something like I wrote a really completely different type of zombie story that I thought no one would be interested in, and I wrote it because it was important for me to write it, and I just put it out there, and I've been watching the response to that. But with my other works, I can post a synopsis of several stories online that I want to write and say, what is my most avid readers, what do you guys want me to write next, because I'm up in the air with some of this stuff. I can write one of three books next. And if they have a preference, then I'm eager to have them be a part of that process.
I do find it interesting. You were talking about the many aspects and how, you know, it doesn't fully deserve the label of science fiction, and people who often say to you that, you know, they don't read science fiction, but they do like this book. The fact that there is this wholly realized world that you have created, and this entire world, this entire place, all of these characters, the rules, and it very much put me in, and you mentioned this name before, of Ray Bradbury and Philip K. Dick and others who have so successfully created these wondrous places. And so that leads me to believe that that's the type of thing that you read, that what you grew up with.
I did. I grew up reading a lot of the science fiction and the dystopian classics, but I also read a lot of history and philosophy and psychology, and I think those are all interspersed throughout the story as well. And I think that anyone who writes dystopia probably draws a lot from history and current events. The interesting thing is I'm a complete optimist. I just think the world's getting better and better, but those stories aren't as interesting. So when I write, I tend to draw from a darker perspective than I actually view the world from.
Does it boggle your mind that you've been so successful with Wool, and yet you are told, and with the publication of this book now, that there's even more people and there's a new audience and it's going out to even more people? Like, it hasn't reached its limits.
Yeah, it is amazing to me. When we first had our very first offers from publishers over a year ago, we were told by some who declined that everyone who was ever going to read this book already has. And since then, 100,000 people have read it at that point. Now we're over 500,000. And for all I know, there's another million people out there who might pick up this story and enjoy it. And the great thing about still owning the digital rights the way I do is that book will stay published forever. And there are readers being born right now who might encounter this story 20 years from now and enjoy it, and that's exciting.
Well, it's a fascinating story of publication, but also a wonderful story that you have written, and is a beautiful showing of imagination. The book is Wool. It is published by Simon & Schuster in both paperback and hardcover. Hugh Howey, what a pleasure. Thank you very much, and continued good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
A pleasure. Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Wool. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.